Are higher consumer prices about to send the economy back into a recession? How is it possible the CPI can be rising while treasury yields are falling? And is the bond market telling the equity stock market that the party's almost over? All that and more on today's Macro Show. I'm your host, Steve Van Meter, and thanks for joining me today. You know, a lot of people don't understand what higher consumer prices mean. Now, you might be like, well, that's inflation. But what kind of inflation is it? Is it because there's so much money sloshing around the financial system? Are people back to work? Are there so much demand that there isn't enough supply? Is it a supply chain issue? What's the real issue? Because there's a big difference. If you're in a recovery and the economy is expanding, then the consumers can absorb higher prices. But if you're stuck in a recession, I want you to think back to 2008 and 2009. Remember, the consumer price index shot up because oil prices shot up. And then what happened? Deflationary crash, and oil prices came just plummeting down because consumers couldn't afford those higher prices. Now, I want you to think, if you were in charge of engineering an economic recovery, and it was bad, I mean, really bad out there, would you want higher prices or lower prices? You'd want lower consumer prices because consumers don't have much money at the bottom. They're usually not as employed as they once were. Those that are aren't making as much money. Their debts are fairly high. When the economy is good, consumers can absorb higher prices. When it's bad, they can't. And that's why higher consumer prices can actually be a sign of tightening financial conditions. Normally, it isn't always that way. Because again, in an expansion, those higher prices can be absorbed. But in a recession or in tight financial conditions, they can't. And today, we got some evidence from the University of Michigan's Consumer Sentiment Survey with their preliminary data for June. Check this out, because it validates that higher prices are going to be rejected. And here you can see consumer spending intentions plummeting. Consumer buying plans for 6 months for homes, plummeting. Appliances, plummeting. Automobiles, plummeting. And yet, there's people are still out there buying cars. But their intentions are that they're not going to. How about home buyer sentiment? We've seen this thing is ugly. You know, people have asked me over the last couple of years, are you sure there's going to be a crash in home prices? Are you sure prices are going to go down at some point? Absolutely. Here you can see sentiment for buying homes, plummeting. Meanwhile, builders are super excited. It's telling you there's going to be too much inventory at some point and not enough buyers. And why is this occurring? Because prices are too high and consumers only have so much money. And we get to the unemployment data, you're going to find out how much money they're not going to have pretty soon. Let's continue on and see there's even more inflation expectations. You know, the consumers always get inflation wrong. In fact, if you want to take the opposite bet on this, you're usually in good hands. Because you look where consumers think inflation is peaking, and it's probably because interest rates have bottomed or have peaked at the same point, and bonds perhaps bottoming at the same point as consumers think inflation is coming. And here you can see inflation expectations tumbling now. And look at this, bad buying conditions. Why, you know, when they did the survey, they asked consumers, why aren't you willing to buy? Prices are too high. Look at that. Prices are too high for homes, can't afford them. Prices too high for durable goods, washers, dryers, fridges, things like that, can't afford them. Prices too high for vehicles, can't afford them. And so what it's telling you, these higher consumer prices will be rejected. Because again, you know, if you have a store and it's full of inventory and nobody comes in and buys it, how long can you go and sustain and have no business? At some point, all these prices have to come down because inventory needs to get moved. And it starts backing up in the supply chains and debts start packing up and people need to move product. That is how higher prices get rejected. Lack of demand. And eventually, wholesalers, retailers, producers, everybody starts lowering prices because they have no choice. Let's take a look at the economic data before we get into the CPI. Some interesting stuff there for sure. We see foreign bond buying out of Japan back up. Producer prices in Japan, a very hot, but not as hot, a disinflationary hot of 0.7% in May, bringing the euro year up to 4.9%. Let's move into the Thursday data. where we start to get some interesting things in the U.S. And let's start with the jobs data. Let's go right over to the Department of Labor, and we see initial claims sliding. Now, again, this is a good sign. The real number needs to be somewhere in the low 200,000s. That's normal. So we're still high, but at least the trend is now finally going the right way. Even the non-seasonally adjusted number dropped from 425 to 367. So the trend there is good. But something I want you to think about as we go back and look at the spending intentions. Whoops. What is going on is we still have 15.3 million people on some form of unemployment benefit. And if every one of them is getting an extra $300 a week, that's 15.3 million that in the next few months are going to have $1,200 a month of less income to spend. And that's another reason you think about how can this inflation story be sustained if people that need help are already going to have, it's already baked in the cake, they're going to have less income. And the total number didn't fall much. 95,000 people fell off that list. And I believe in the next couple of weeks, this number should start to drop as states start canceling these extra benefits. But I want you to keep in mind, the inflation story is going to end because there won't be as much money to support these higher prices. Now let's go into the CPI index. The consumer price index rose month over month. That's not the one I'm looking for. Where is it? There it is, 0.6%. So it's disinflationary. So it's growing at a slower rate now. Still at 0.6. That's a pretty hot number. And brought the year-over-year rate to plus 5%. Now, remember back in May of last year, this number was fairly low. The core, which excludes food and energy, also disinflationary, but still very hot at 0.7. bringing core up to 3.8%. Now let's go to the Consumer Price Index, which is at the Bureau of Labor Statistics, because there's one thing I wanna look at here is that these higher prices aren't really affecting everybody. If you look at the data, which we're gonna look at, of these higher prices, it's mostly due to about 20% of the index. 80% of it went up, somewhere around 0.2%. And that translates to a year-over-year rate change of around 2% a year. There's a reason the Fed is not worried about this. They know there's a lot of base effects, and they know there's a lot of supply chain effects that are going to get cleared out. Of course, we'll hear from the Fed next week, but I expect no policy changes from them because they know this is transitory. But let's look at who might be affected by these higher prices in May. And we can go and look and see energy services were up. And what was the big number? Piped gas. So perhaps there was somewhere, maybe it was really cold, people were using a lot of gas. Now we go into the regular CPI. That was in the core, as up here. And fuel oil. So there you have it. So obviously some people needed gas, fuel, heat, and those numbers were up. In fact, look at the year over year number in energy of 28.5%. Now, do you think that number is sustainable? It's not. Now, do you think gasoline is going to continue to go up at 50% per year? No, not going to happen. Is pipe gas service going to go up at 13.5% per year? Unlikely. Highly unlikely that those are going to continue. So unless you were in an area where you needed fuel oil or pipe gas service, you didn't experience that. Now let's look at the rest of the CPI. You see a big number, 7.3% in used vehicles. So if you didn't buy a used car last month, or truck, you didn't feel that. And maybe you didn't buy any clothes either, because those were up 1.2%. And transportation services were up 1.5%. So what is this translating to? Well, if last month it was really cold where you're at and you were tired of running up your gas bill, so you bought a used car and bought some new clothes and went and took a trip, you experienced inflation. Otherwise, you didn't see that much of it. In fact, we can even look at the Cleveland CPI data, and we see that as well. This is a median CPI from the Cleveland Fed, which really gives us a better indication. And you see it in this orange line where these outlying moves of the CPI get rejected and come back to trend. And the median CPI is a 1 month inflation rate of the component whose expenditure weight is in the 50th percentile of price changes. So it tries to look at kind of the median. I mean, it is looking at the median. You can even then go to the 16% trimmed mean CPI, which is a weighted average of 1 month inflation rates of components whose expenditure weights fall below the 92nd percentile. And even though it's up, you're still seeing major outlying moves here. And that's what the Cleveland Fed tries to figure out, is saying, look, are we, or is the trend changing, or are there just some outlying data points? And what it's suggesting is there's outlying data points. And you can see just how deep this was going back to May of last year. I mean, the CPI was effectively at zero. So now you have a big move higher there. And so then that kind of begs the question of, you know, how is it the consumer price index can be rising at the same time interest rates are starting to roll? What is the bond market saying here? Why are yields going down? Is it because the bond market's calling bluff? No, it's because the bond market, well, I mean, you could probably make that statement if you want. The bond market knows that higher consumer prices are leading to tighter financial conditions. They're not rising because financial conditions are loose. They're rising for the wrong reasons. Again, if there was lots of money sloshing around and jobs, and you could see people out spending money and creating jobs and getting the velocity of money moving and all these things, yeah, those higher prices could be justified, and then you'd see interest rates go up. But the bond market is telling you, nah, financial conditions are tight, and these higher prices are making them worse. So let's take a look at this chart that I created from the Fred database, and you could see back even in the great financial crisis where consumer prices were rising, people were panicked about inflation then. It was over 5%. It's not quite there now. And the bond market had a little bit of a backup and then said, nah, we don't buy it. And next thing you know, consumer prices came back down. And as consumer prices went negative on a year over year, the bond market was said, okay, that's probably too far. And it was right, brought consumer prices back up. They both went down together, up together, down together, and kind of stayed fairly linked there. And then there's a bit of separation as consumer prices started to rise. The bond market said no and said, well, maybe you're right about that. And then in late 2018, bond prices peaked, or bond treasury yields peaked, started coming down. Consumer prices said, yeah, I think we're good on that. Maybe not. Okay, yeah, you're right. You're right. Whoa, you're really right. And now consumer prices are shooting up and the bond market's saying, nah, I don't think you got this. I think you're going the wrong direction here. So what the bond market is telling us as interest rates head back down is, again, financial conditions are tight. These higher prices will be rejected. That is indeed what it is telling us. Let's go back to the economic data and move into let's see what we have. Export prices coming out of South Korea up double digits from a year ago. That totally makes sense. And most of this data is from April. Spanish CPI, month over month, went from 1.2 to 0.5. That's very disinflationary. Cut more than half, even as the year over year went to 2.7. So again, some further indicators that perhaps the inflation in the U.S. story is going to kind of melt away. And we already looked at the University of Michigan data. Of course, the sentiment, current conditions, and expectations all went up, which is interesting to me, given the fact that their buying conditions and all that went way down. All right, let's take a look at the, before we get to the bank data, you know, some of you have been kind of asking me about, like, how is it the treasury yields can tell the stock market things are kind of ending? Because on average, when financial conditions tighten, which tends to happen toward the end of an economic cycle, treasury yields lead stock prices lower on average by 3 months. So when did treasury yields peak? They peaked in March, late March. So late March to April, May, into June, which tells us, since we're in June, that we're in that window where stock prices should peak. Now let's look at this chart, and what we've got is the Wilshire 5000 in red and treasury yields in blue, 10-year treasury yields. And what you can see here is treasury yields were leading. Here you see the peak, market peak, leading it lower all the way through. And here you can see again, treasury yields double top, start coming down, lead equity prices lower. Treasury yields peak, eventually the market gets the note, says okay. And now the market thinks reflation is thinking 2013. The market's thinking we're here. And yields are saying, no, we're not. We're still in a recession. We're more likely in like the great financial crisis where we had this little backup, except the stock market went up, and now we're about to head lower. That's the big difference here. Now let's take a look at the banking data, because the banking data is just another form of validation here that financial conditions are tightening. Because if we were in reflation, we should see lending growth. And if we're in tight financial conditions, we should see lending growth be either very low or even worse, contracting. Let's take a look at what's going on with the assets and liabilities, all commercial banks. Bank credit up $18 billion, which would be a good sign, except securities and bank credit were up $29 billion, with mortgage backed up $12 billion, U.S. Treasury up $8 billion. So again, banks are buying bonds. It's the other securities that they added to, some non-treasury securities that they're adding on here as well. How about loans and leases? Down $11 billion. So again, you don't see a reflation story there. How about real estate? Down $4 billion. Consumer is the only one holding this up. They're up $1 billion. And cash assets were up $27 billion, bringing the reverse repo problem up to $547.8 billion, to which we will probably get an answer from Jerome Powell next week at the FOMC meeting. Let's take a look at the bonds real quick. You're seeing a nice pattern here. Wyckoff, remember, had that spring coming out of here, and now it's looking like it's ready to bust higher. From the 30-year treasury, you see it's hovering at this point, which are about to collapse down to 1.8%. I did move this line down for the technical charters to keep in mind, wherever you draw your lines originally, sometimes they need to be adjusted. So it looks like the real line, I had it off a little bit, but now we're seeing what could be a bigger move headed lower. And for those who do watch the Sunday night chart show, I did a major revamp on it, made it a lot easier for you. We'll take a look at this in a lot more detail on Sunday. And in the meantime, to Bondor. Anyways, thanks for being fans. Thanks for liking. Thanks for subscribing. For those of you, again, watch Sunday Night Chart Show, we'll see you Sunday. And if not, we'll be back on Monday for the Macro Show. I'm Steve Van Meter. Bye now. The content of this video is provided as educational information only. It's not intended to provide investment or other advice. This general is not to be construed as a recommendation or solicitation by a selling security, financial instrument, or participating in particular trading strategies. Video was paired by Steve Van Meter, personal capacity, business expressive video that do not reflect the view of Atlas Financial Advisors, Inc., or Steve Van Meter Financial.